Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Sound Health Options on Blog Talk Radio. It's great to have you back with us. Hope you're having a great day and thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, and we're having a bit of trouble getting in touch with our guests today. We are going to be talking about partner relationships. Nearly every adult has had at least one loving relationship, but many of us know who are participating in those relationships, we don't do it very successfully. Divorce rate is alarming, about 50%. Nearly every magazine and newspaper you pick up these days has at least one column that offers relationship advice. So, let's admit it. Lots of us just aren't satisfied with our ability to maintain a healthy and happy. That may be our guess. Okay, hold on a second. Hello?
Oh, hello, is it Sherry?
Yes, is it Charlie?
Yes.
We are having trouble connecting with you. Could you call in on our call-in number, 347-850-1407? Yes, something's going on with Blog Talk. They're just not allowing us to dial out it to anybody. So, okay, and I'll just tune you in, and you can just listen as we're going.
Okay, good.
Thanks for calling me. Boy, modern technology, don't you love it? Okay, now I can turn that cell phone off. Okay. Back to the show. Lots of us are not satisfied with our ability to maintain a healthy and happy marriage or relationship, whatever kind of partnership you have. But our guests today, Charlie and Linda Bloom, they're therapists. They've written a book called Secrets of a Great Marriage, and they're going to share those secrets with us today. So stay tuned. We do have the chat session open. You can see information about our guests there and some of the articles, and Talk to Me Guy is probably putting up some of the other articles that I've sent him as we speak. We've got some interesting things going on today. So if you want to listen to the show, even if your relationship's perfect, your friend or your neighbor, statistically speaking, one of those people are having issues. So call us. Let me go back to the switchboard here and see these people coming in. Okay, I've put them on the air, but we're going to go on with the show now. We do have call-ins, 347-850-1407. And remember to push that one button that will let me know that you would like to speak. We're brought to you today by the Sound Health Research Center located in Southern Ohio. As most of you know, I'm director of the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, and we are on a mission, a campaign to create an alternative to our present healthcare system. And we use a technique we pioneered, vocal profiling, to allow the voice to diagnose and prescribe for itself, even down to our personality traits. Today, the software most related to our topic of relationships and Charlie and Linda's book, Secrets of a Great Marriage, is our Nano Voice program. It can be downloaded from Nano, N-A-N-O, voice.org. And it can certainly be used to compare personality traits and compatibilities in a relationship. In the weeks to come, we'll be using our ability to show our audience what we're talking about and see compatibilities in relationships, but we aren't doing that today. So just kind of sit back and listen to what's going on. Other software that would be of interest to our people about this is the Sex Factors, which contains information about hormones of the intimacy and sex, and The New Woman, which is particularly about enzymes, anything that helps a woman make hormones and deals with fertility and those kinds of things. These programs can be used for many projects like partner compatibility, a dating service to take a test of someone's voice as you're talking to them over the phone. Would be hard to do that in email, but you could call them up and talk to them. Okay, a few announcements before we go to our special guest. We just came back from the Transformation Conference with Daniel Brinkley, and you can get a copy of that from Ozark, O-Z-A-R-K-M-T, OzarkMountain.com. It's a publishing company. They put on the conference. It's Dolores Cannon's people. You can get a copy of my presentation, and they put us on with Daniel Brinkley by writing to that email or just going to their site and talk to Joy, and she can get you a copy of the presentation. We did add a lot of ancient healing techniques information. Okay, we have a couple of requests. Let's answer those from our audience. We appreciate our audience writing to us. Okay, this request is from Peggy Sanders. Would you please repeat the information about looking at a vocal print to see cancer potential? Well, absolutely, Peggy will do that. And what we talked about when we did that show was looking at vitamin A in the vocal print and then an enzyme catalase. Bioacoustically speaking, when vitamin A goes high and it's not usable, that's one of the precursors to cancer, sometimes 3 or 4 years ahead of time. And vitamin A, bioacoustically speaking, is right on the edge of C-sharp and D. So if either one of those are going high in tandem with catalase, A-sharp going low, then you should get in touch with our office. We'll do a vocal print for you online, and we could give you some more information. Or any of you who want to download the Nano Voice software, just Nano Voice, N-A-N-O-Voice.org, and you can look at these things for yourself. But you must find those in combination before we want to go on and look at it. Okay, we have an update for the Guardian of the People. For those of you who haven't listened to us, and I see some new people, first, what is the network, the Guardian of the People network? Well, the intent of that was to set up an incredible system of self-health so that we are not stuck in the system of health care that we may not appreciate, that we really don't want, or we don't want to look at rationed services. We don't want the failure of the government to look at our returning soldiers who have PTSD and TBI, and we've talked about that on a couple of shows. So we want to provide these computer programs to people so that everyone can have a potential look at their health and see what's coming and what they could do about that. So it's Guardians, and that's with an S, guardiansofthepeople.com. The mission statement is there. How you can join the network is there, and every month we give away software and a class to the people who are in that network. This month, June, we're giving away the nutrition consultant program, and next month it will be the muscle program. So for the nutrition people, it helps them take vitamins, it helps them look at why nutrients may not be working. And so we're going to do the same thing next month with muscles for people doing exercise and maybe what they need to stretch before they start or what muscles are weak. Okay, this, well, it doesn't say who this one's from, but there is a new executive order that Obama has put out, and it's put my health care concerns at an all-time high. I don't really know a lot about it, just it, that Obama has put together this order that puts the Surgeon General in head of a council that only reports to Obama. And within this council, he has put the Secretary of Agriculture, Labor, Health and Human Services, Transportation, Education, Homeland Security, Environmental Protection, Federal Trade Commission, oh, on and on and on and on. Everybody who deals with anything with food and health safety. So that's a little scary that that is going on. Ralph Usatola is our avenger of all things health and wellness. So, Ralph, if you're listening today and you know something about this, and you could kind of keep it short for people how they could do something about this or find out how to know more about it, the show's jam-packed. But I'd like to hear from you so we can know what we can do about this. Okay, and about the Guardian Network, we have a complaint from Paul. He says he saw the word trial on his software and thought that we were not being the good people we claim to be. He says he can't do a decent sort of reports if things are a trial, and that everything is coming out the same. Okay, I'd like to clear those two things up. The trial on your software means that you didn't sign up for a year membership. You signed up monthly. And so a trial just means your software is only going to run for the 30 days you signed up for, and then you just re-registered it if you're going to sign up for the next month. So that is just to keep that software safe. And the other thing about you can't run a nutrition report. You know, no two people have the same voice print or the same report. In my 30 years of doing vocal profiling, I've never seen that happen. So something is wrong here. So if that's happening to you, call or write as Paul did, and we'll arrange to meet you online, look at your computer, and see what's going on. Okay, another short question from Nancy Brewster. Why do I need to register my bioacoustic software? Don't you trust me? Trust is not really the issue here. Human nature is the issue. And when we gave away the software last year, to certain people that earned it as a prize or whatever was going on, people took it upon themselves to give away that software and to sell that software beyond what we had intended. So we put a registration on it just because greed is a large part of human nature and we need to be paid for our commitment, services, our work. We're not required to give away what we create, although in a lot of cases we do. But we also should be compensated for it. And you could think about that. Every time you get something for free, somebody paid for it. It's likely someone wants something from you if they gave you something for free. And in our case, what we want is that you to know about vocal profiling and the benefits that it offers to you, your family, your clientele, your community, humanity. You know, even Oprah, when she gave away a car to each of her audience members, still had a motive. The car company received goodwill in advertising. Oprah got to feel good about being able to provide such an incredible gift to each of her audience members. And certainly it enhanced her reputation. So remember, if you have questions today, it's Sherry, Sharry, onair@gmail.com. Or you can call us at 347-850-1407. One more little thing here before we move on to our guest. Our friend Robert asked me to assess the sounds of the horns being blown at the World Cup. It is a little bit flat of A. He sent us a recording of it. But what that represents as a frequency is Marburg pathogen, and it's a form of Ebola that can be contracted by both humans and primates. Now, it is not going to give you Ebola, but if you've been exposed to it, it can activate it. So we Richard and I, put it up on the chat. So it's up there for people to listen to the horns. And also, I'm just trying to read this at the same time. I think he's posted the article that I wrote about this. It shows a picture of what that horn gives as a sound. Okay, another question has come in. But it also tells you that what its frequency is, what it looks like, and how it's associated with the Ebola. So I would think that Talk to Me Guy has put that in our chat, in our Dropbox. It's drop.io/nanovoice. And he'll probably post that on the chat. Are the programs that are given away at Guardian Network self-contained, or do they require another program to run it? Yes, they require Audacity, but you can download that for free from Audacity, Audacity, dot SourceForge, SourceForge, dot net. And then we give you everything else to do it. Actually, it's not one program we give away every month. If you're a new member, you'll get two programs. You'll get a program that will help you decide what frequencies you want to look at in that vocal print. So that was a good question. You don't have to take the course either, because the little booklet is kind of self-contained, but you get a lot of information about what's going on. Okay, Charlie and Linda Bloom have been very patient with us and all these announcements and the things that we love to share with people. They have been married to each other for 35 years, certainly a long time in this day and age. They are therapists. They have authored a wonderful book that I have been reading called Secrets of a Great Marriage, Real Truth from Real Couples About Lasting Love. Lasting Love. I have a typo here. Amazon gives it 5 stars, highest rating, and it is on sale right now at Amazon. I didn't check anyplace else. And we are going to ask Charlie and Linda to talk to us about this book, answer questions, and give us some insights on how we can get in touch with them. Welcome to Sound Health Options, Charlie and Linda Bloom.
Thank you for having us.
Everybody puts out books about marriage and how we get along with people, but yours is very unique. It's not just how to; it's how people lived this and how they worked through it and how they nourish their relationship and adjust and adapt. Why did you guys feel this book needed to be written? I mean, certainly it did, because it's unique in its presentation. But what was the impetus for you guys to write it?
Well, you know, we're both marriage counselors, and we've been doing couples counseling for over 30 years. And we have been with people who have just struggled and suffered and angry and bitter and disappointed. We've just heard a lot of sad stories, and we just thought it would be the most incredible antidote to be able to find the happiest couples that we could find all over the country and talk to them and let them tell their secrets of success in their own words. Over the years, we've had a lot of people say to us, I don't know one happily married couple. I don't even know if they believe, I don't believe they exist. I think it's just Hollywood makes up stories. It's a fantasy. I don't know one couple that I would want to emulate their relationship and hold them as a model. And when people would say that, I'd say, wait, I know happily married couples. They do exist. I'm a happily married person. And so we wanted to do this to show that there are a lot of happy couples out there, and they didn't just luck into that good relationship. They just didn't find Prince Charming or Princess Charming. They earned it. They worked for it. They grew the skills and the qualities that made them eligible for a great relationship.
Great answer. You know, I love the title, Secrets of Great Marriages, Real Truth from Real Couples About Lasting Love. Now, we've had an ongoing running thing here on Sound Health Options about the definition of what love is. Would either of you like to share what your definition is of that?
Charlie, you on the line?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
I asked for a definition of love, what love really is.
Yeah, I was saying we could probably spend the rest of the show and maybe a couple other shows just kind of talking about that. And it's a very powerful question. So let me just give you my abbreviated response to that question. First of all, it's more than a feeling. I think that'd be a good name for a song. But it's more than a feeling, and it is one of the ways that we describe it is that it is a way of showing your devotion through care and action towards another person or towards others. So it's a dynamic experience. It's not simply an emotion that one feels, but it isn't really complete unless there's a desire to enhance the well-being of another person.
So, would you repeat that first sentence? I think that's an incredible sentence. It's a way to show devotion through?
Through your care and action
care
towards
and
others. So when you really do experience the feeling of love, whether it's towards another individual or you know, towards the earth, towards any creature, there's an impulse, an internal impulse within us that drives us to want to, in some way, enhance the well-being of that being, to support them in becoming fulfilled in whatever way is possible, whatever that might look like for that person. And when we feel that, as a parent does a child, as a person does with their beloved, this impulse, this desire to give to them springs forth naturally and spontaneously. However, there can be things that impede our ability to really connect to that feeling, and one of those things is fear. So that when we're feeling fear, the fear can block our ability to experience the love that may be there towards somebody, and that's one of the things that probably is the biggest factor in terms of relationships breaking down, is the inability of people to effectively manage their anxiety and their fear that blocks their ability to express love and to receive it too.
We're looking at this idea of lasting love, not the infatuation, the blissful stuff that happens in the beginning, the stuff that addicts us to wanting more of that in a relationship.
We went way out of our way to find the couples that have been in the trenches for a while. We didn't want to just interview the happy couples that had only been at it for a few years. The average amount of time that the couples that we interviewed had been together was 31 years. This was clearly the voice of experience.
Wow.
And they talked about the times when love sometimes was a bit faded, that sometimes it was eclipsed by some resentment or breakdowns of different kinds. they had been together long enough that life had tossed them around a bit, that they had had health crises or financial crises, or some of the couples that we interviewed confessed affairs to us. We didn't ask. They offered. And they talked about how the trust dipped down and the intimacy dipped down, and they, some of them had some really rough patches to have to traverse. But they used what life gave them, and they're a resilient bunch. It was one of the characteristics that really stood out in this group. They went into the dark, they experienced it, and they came through it stronger than before. So it was really quite inspirational to be around these people, to hear their stories and what they'd been through and what they made of what life handed them.
You have some famous people in your book, Larry Dossey, and I can't remember his wife's name.
Barbara,
and then Linda and Justine and Michael Toms from New Dimensions Radio. I'm sure everybody knows who Larry Dossey is and all the books he's written on prayer and intention. But the commonality with that those couples is that the people inside those are gentle, caring people in the beginning. Did they start their relationship that way, or did their relationship cause them or turn them into these gentle, caring, cooperative people?
Well, I think it's kind of, the answer is sort of yes, both. I think that we all have that part of ourselves that is sensitive, caring, and gentle, and under the right conditions, those qualities will be brought forth. And although some of the people in the book were very developed in that area, in those areas when they met each other, there are quite a few who really grew into it through the relationship, that the relationship itself became the means through which they cultivated and deepened and strengthened those qualities and took it on as a practice. So, for instance, in Larry's case, Larry Dossey, if you read the story, then you know about his experience in Vietnam, where he was, as a younger man, he was anything but a very sensitive, compassionate, caring person. I mean, he had those qualities, but he was also very steeped in the tradition, in this culture of macho-ness, and he was an officer in the army. He was in Vietnam. He was a flight surgeon, and he volunteered for some very, very dangerous missions. And it's impossible to be in that situation and retain all of your sensitivity. So one of the things I love about their story is how he was able to kind of recover from the macho male conditioning and from the wounds, the emotional wounds that he experienced from that through his relationship with his wife, Barbara. And that's what's so profound about so many of these stories, is that they really show how it's possible to use your relationship really as a means of becoming a more whole, integrated, and loving person.
In doing some research to have you guys on the show, I sort of asked some questions of friends and people at work. And in your book, you talk about the major thing that's required, and it's commitment, commitment, commitment. And that came up for a lot of people, but also communication, understanding, compatibility, and forgiveness. And that came from a man. And so I was just a little taken aback that was one of his major issues. You have to forgive them for being themselves and help them become partners. Do you guys have major characteristics that you would list that belong to lasting relationships?
I think the ones that you mentioned just now are really high up there on the priority list. They're very caring people. They're compassionate people. They listen well. They have terrific communication skills. I would add, as a subcategory under communication skills, they have great problem-solving skills and conflict management skills. Because I think the stories show that not all of these couples were really harmonious and cool temperaments. Some of them have fiery temperaments. They have irreconcilable differences, as every couple has. So they had some areas of compatibility, but some areas where they weren't so compatible, but they created a big space that could make room for it and emphasize the part of their relationship that did work rather than the parts that were problematical and challenging. So, of course, to be compassionate and caring and forgiving, those are such incredibly important characteristics that I think we spend a lifetime getting mastery in those areas. Not everybody starts out with it early in their relationship, but as they develop it, you can usually see the relationship blossoming out of those qualities.
Awesome. It brings up a question that someone has sent in before the show. And it was a long question, but essentially they're asking, is it better to find somebody to love and work it out, or is it better to examine your expectations and who you are and your compatibilities beforehand and then go into a relationship? That was a hard one.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's another one of those yes and questions, not either or. Even if you have done, you know, your own personal spiritual work and have and you're coming into a relationship with more consciousness, you know, than let's say the average person has, that's no guarantee that you're not going to discover aspects of yourself in the process of living with another person that need attention, that might need healing, that might need to be worked with in some conscious way. So it definitely is tremendously helpful if you're on that path already, and if you're already living as a self-responsible person who is doing their own work and, you know, whatever that looks like, whatever that involves. But it's still no guarantee that in a relationship, you're not, there isn't any way that you can assure that once you get into a relationship, you're not going to have some rough edges. It's pretty universal. Now, I wouldn't say that there are no couples out there who have it easy, because there were a couple of couples that we interviewed, you know, out of the 50 that we interviewed, there were two or three that really have had just ideal and effortless relationships. But I have to emphasize that they're in the very small minority. And all of them had done, you know, quite a bit of personal work themselves prior to getting into the marriage. So I think, just to be realistic, it's important not to set yourself up to feel disappointed in yourself or in your partner if things break down, because that tends to happen in even the best of relationships. There are difficult times. Sometimes they last for a few minutes. Sometimes they last for a few months. But it certainly is a great idea to do whatever work you can do prior to getting into the relationship.
We've talked about some of the things that help. What about some of the things that tear a relationship apart?
Well, this is the question about deal breakers. Do you know, sometimes people have a mistaken idea about us because we're such a stand for hanging in there and working on yourself and working with the relationship. But there are really some relationships that should not be saved. And not every marriage deserves to be saved. And there are only, you know, maybe a half a dozen that we consider to be real, true deal breakers. And most people don't get divorced for these. One would be abuse. It takes a terrible toll on a relationship if there's physical abuse or psychological abuse. like lying, a chronic judgment and criticism, you know, carping at the other person. And if the person who is doing it, the abusive behaviors, doesn't get help for that, doesn't go to the anger management class, doesn't go to therapy, doesn't look at what it is that's motivating those nasty interchanges, the person who is partnered with them needs to run for their life. Addiction is another huge culprit, tears a relationship up. Doesn't matter whether it's alcohol or drugs or sex addiction or gambling addiction, but when a person is caught in those compulsive behaviors, they're really married to the addiction and they're not really married to the partner. It drains the life force out of the relationship. And of course, you know, when there is a transgression in the relationship and there is a lack of forgiveness, even if the person has learned from the mistake, they have changed their ways, they have apologized, they have asked for forgiveness, and the other person is still holding them as some kind of a criminal and really is caught in this belief system that people don't really change and they live in paranoia of the other shoe is going to drop, then that can be the kiss of death of relationship too, because they're living in the past. They haven't been able to get past the breakdown to come to present moment to really live a more wholesome relationship in the present and the future. So those situations are all workable if people get good help, and they are the kiss of death of relationship if they get stuck in it.
Do you think in a lot of early marriages, I'm talking about age, that they just don't know what they really want? And that's why so many young marriages fail?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. I think one of the best things that a person can do preparing for marriage is to wait until they have matured a little bit and not to jump in too soon, not to be too hasty, but to really let themselves become a little seasoned by life, and even if that means taking a few hits and getting knocked around a little bit, and to find somebody who also has experienced more of the challenges that life can bring, not just because it's a way of, you know, finding out where your strengths and weaknesses are, but because that is how we mature, by being exposed to stress and adversity. Of course, we don't want to have so much that it overwhelms us, but that's how maturity gets developed. And there's a very strong correlation in terms of the success rate of marriages where people got married when they were older. I don't mean old, but at least in their late 20s, if not early 30s, as opposed to couples who get married in their teens or early 20s. The statistics are very conclusive about the benefits for delaying marriage until we get a little bit older.
I have some wonderful questions coming up about this. Is it possible to love someone and not be able to be partners with them? At what point do you just give up?
Well, it is possible to love people and to decide that we are really not a good match. You know, we need to love them from afar. We don't really want to live under the same roof with them, but we can hold that person in our heart forever. Do you know, there's room in our big heart to make room for other people as well as them. But sometimes people do give up on a relationship before they gave it a really good trial. Now, of course, we all know people who stayed in a relationship years too long and they finally get out and they feel so free and unencumbered and that life is beautiful and they say, oh my God, why did I stay so long? But what we see a lot of is people who give up on a relationship where there's good raw materials, there is love there, but they have a romantic notion in their mind that it shouldn't have to be so hard. And for many couples, there at least are times in their relationship, often in the beginning, where they are maturing, where they are growing, where they're learning self-discipline, where they're learning their communication skills, like how to speak truth without blame and judgment, when they're growing the courage to be able to speak up about their needs and getting clarity about boundaries and this works for me and this doesn't. And they give up on relationships that have tremendous potential, but they haven't worked it enough yet. A lot of people don't have good models of what a working partnership looks like because their family of origin didn't offer that to them. And sometimes people are just caught in this romantic notion of you shouldn't have to work at it. Do you know that just because you fall in love, it's supposed to all flow out of that? And it's not, you know, it's not very romantic to think you have to grow skills, but you do.
I love that. Speak truth without blame or judgment. A couple of other quick questions that just come in. Do you believe in love at first sight?
Well, it's certainly a reality for millions of people. I believe that people can meet the person that they feel is their soulmate and have that confidence that that's true, and sometimes it is. There are some people in our book who, from the moment they laid eyes on each other, or maybe one of them laid eyes, that doesn't always work mutually, but there are people who really felt that this was the person, and in fact it did turn out to be. However, there are a lot of examples of cases where one or both people fell in love with each other, I'm putting that in quotes, from the moment they met and it didn't work out. So you can't be certain. Your emotions are not going to always be an accurate indicator of whether this is the right person for me. Chemistry is a funny thing. It can be very powerful, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we are destined to have a lasting or easy relationship. Some people make the mistake of believing that there's a correlation between the intensity of my desire for this person and the intensity of our enjoyment of each other with the ease with which our relationship will proceed. Because it's so easy to believe that and to think that, you know, God, how could we possibly ever have an argument? We both love each other so much. This is just a marriage that's made in heaven, or this is a relationship that is always going to be effortless and wonderful. Yes, you can feel that feeling of love at first sight, but more often than not, it's infatuation at first sight, and that's very mm-hmm. different from love. There can be love and infatuation at the same time, but often it's just infatuation at the very beginning. Why is that? Because we can only love somebody that we really know, and you can't know somebody simply by looking at them or spending a few minutes with them.
So you're saying it's okay to start a relationship that way, but there still might be work.
Absolutely, but don't kid yourself into thinking that this is the perfect match. So it's fine to start it that way, but keep your eyes open and be realistic.
Do you think that people should check out sexual compatibility before marriage?
You know, I believe personally that that is helpful, and some people really are not compatible, and if you spend some time together, both in the bedroom, doing life together, seeing if you have interests in common, see if you have values in common, that I think can help get people off on good footing. Even if you choose very carefully, even if you know a person a year or two or a few, there still are going to be things that are going to come up later that you're going to have to deal with. Maybe you would have tremendous sexual compatibility in the beginning, and later in the relationship, issues around sexuality might come up, and you're still going to have to communicate, negotiate for your needs, and, you know, there are issues of one person having a higher drive than the other, so it's lessons in patience for the person with the high drive, and it's lessons in generosity of spirit for the person with the lower drive so that they can have some harmony in that area. But I think it's good to, at the very least, talk about your preferences or to experiment and see.
We have a question from our chat room from Richard. What percentage of people do have examples of working relationships, in quotes, growing up?
I don't know what the figures are in that, and I think it would be hard to really get a precise percentage. But we often usually ask, when we're speaking to large groups or teaching our seminars, how many people in this room feel that you grew up with parents who modeled and demonstrated what a healthy relationship looks like? And I can tell you that on average, it's less than 10% in our surveys, which, you know, are not scientific by any means, but it's rare that we'll get more than 10% of the people in the room who raise their hands.
So we may be failing because our parents didn't know what to do either.
Well, there's no question in my mind that that's true. Sure, what you're saying.
And I just might add, and we talked about this couple in our first book, 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married, that if you came from a very loving family, this woman came from a family where her parents adored each other, they adored her, and her grandmother lived in the house, and the grandmother adored her and got along very well with her mother and father. So everybody in the family, the whole time she was growing up, she grew up bathed in love, they were very respectful about the way they talked with each other, and she said, there's no free lunch. I still had to learn to negotiate with my husband for my boundaries. So even if you're blessed to be that small statistical group that did have a wonderful model, you still have skills you have to learn.
Charlie mentioned that you guys do workshops. Could you talk a little bit about that and appearances and personal counseling? And
mm-hmm. People can find out where we're going to be by going to our website, Bloomwork, BLOOMWORK. And we're on the East Coast at Kripalu in Massachusetts. We teach at Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California, as well as other places around the country. We do phone counseling for people, even outside of the country. And we have a unique service that we offer that most therapists and marriage counselors don't. We offer intensives. An intensive, a couple will fly in from out of state and spend a day or a couple of days with us. If they've been grappling with an issue that just is gridlocked and is causing them a lot of heartache, they may have already done marriage counseling. Sometimes they've seen a couple few marriage counselors, and they come and they spend a day with us or 2 days. We keep drilling down to the layers under the layers under the layers under the layers with a tremendous amount of support so they can get to the roots of the issue, and frequently there is a breakthrough.
You know, one of the things we have not talked about that I think causes intense pain in a relationship is unfaithfulness.
Yeah, well, we've certainly seen a lot of that in the news lately, haven't we?
Yes.
Yeah. The thing that we would like your listeners to know about this is that in almost all of these cases, and they happen with more frequency than most people realize. But in almost all of these cases, it is possible, if both people have a deep and sincere desire to repair the relationship, that it can be repaired. And it does take often a tremendous amount of work. So having said that, you know, really would hope that people would appreciate just exactly what the dangers are in indulging in an impulse, because very often these affairs are very brief, sometimes just one time, and but the damage, that the price that we pay for indulging in that impulse to have to add a little excitement to our lives, in almost every case that we've spoken to people, they have said, I really wish I hadn't made that choice. And in the moment, it seems like a good idea. But if people would just stop and think about what the consequences are, and then to take a look at what is the need that I am trying to meet outside of my marriage that is not being met in the marriage. Because it's generally not specifically only about sex. It's generally about some other deeper needs that are not being addressed.
Like acceptance or appreciation?
Absolutely. Those two are at the top of the list. They're at the top of the list. And so I'm going to be attracted to somebody who looks at me and says, oh, you're wonderful. You know, oh, you're so smart. You're so attractive, you know, because I'm starving for this in my marriage, because my partner, and it may work both ways, but we're not showing that kind of appreciation for each other.
In addition to the appreciation and the validation that people are so hungry for, we find that some people act out sexually and have affairs because they're bored. They're just not having enough play and adventure. There's not a growth in their relationship. It's sort of become stale and, you know, predictable. They've had a commitment to comfort and security and predictability rather than the growth model that has some adventure where you try some things, you take some risks, you go some places you've never gone before, you speak some truths that you've never spoken before. Sometimes people are just looking for some stimulation because they're so bored.
Well, I've heard the blame game, too. If you loved me better, I wouldn't go someplace else, that kind of thing. But people really have to own this stuff.
Yeah, they certainly do. And if they don't, they will start to consciously or unconsciously build a case against the other person, hold grudges against them, just indulge in a lot of negative assessments about that person, focus on what they don't like about them, and then they convince themselves that they would be better off without them.
You know, it's not a moral stance on our part. It really is just about practicality. When people act out the impulse to be sexual with somebody outside of the monogamous agreement that they have, they are putting at risk years of the trust that they have built. It just is such a waste, you know, for an hour or a few hours of indulgence that way to wipe out what you've so carefully put in place for such a long time. And it can take years, actually, to repair the damage. We have couples in the book who talk about how hard it was to put the trust back in place, because even after the affair stopped, you know, it was a woman in this case who said, when the phone would ring, I would wonder if it would be some other woman. When he would go somewhere, I was wondering whether he was secretly meeting with somebody. But she kept reporting out her fear, and he, to his great credit, didn't tell her, aren't you over this yet? To his great credit, he just held her in his arms, and he said, I have learned from this. It is not going to happen again, and I'm looking forward to the day when you can trust me as much as I trust me. And it still took them 2 years to recover.
We've also got a number of stories in our first book, which is 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married, about people who have had to deal with unfaithfulness in their marriages, too.
Do you ever think there's a time when you just need to sweep something under the rug and keep it to yourself, or just not talk about it?
I think it's very appropriate to, I don't know, sweeping, the phrase sweeping under the rug suggests that there's something that needs to be attended to that we're denying. So I just would like to make a distinction between denial and not disclosing everything that is in your mind. I don't think that it's necessary to discuss and to reveal every single thing that you've done and every thought that you've had. There's not enough hours in the day to do that anyway. And there is a point at which it is appropriate and necessary, I would say, to be able to get complete with something so that you don't have to keep bringing it up. And if somebody insists on continuing to bring something up after the other person has really given it their complete attention and acknowledged responsibility for whatever the issue is and made some effort to create understanding and made amends, if the other person continues to refuse to accept that, then there's a problem there.
Mm-hmm. What I would add to what Charlie said is the sieve to run it through is whether it's going to cause harm. You know, sometimes things are left in the privacy zone and it will cause less harm than speaking openly about it. But a person has to really do an inventory here and look deeply, because sometimes they want to trick themselves into thinking that they can get away with not revealing something that really does need to come out, and that secret can be eroding the trust and eroding the intimacy and, you know, adding to that person's feeling of guilt. And it isn't really protecting the other person. It's just protecting themselves. So you have to scrutinize these choices about whether you're keeping a secret, which can be damaging to the relationship, or whether you really and truly are practicing harmlessness.
We have about 3 minutes left on the show, and a very important question came in. Any tips or hints on how to deal with a selfish lover and or a cheating husband?
A selfish lover or a what?
Cheating husband.
A cheating husband.
I think most women are listening to the show today.
Yeah. Well, 3 minutes, huh?
Well, take selfish lover. Just take one.
Yeah. Selfishness is, we all can have a tendency towards selfishness. What really is important isn't so much whether the person acts selfishly sometimes, it's whether or not they are responsive to our efforts to clarify to them how their selfishness affects us. So if my partner refuses to consider my needs or my preferences or my desires, and 98% of the time wants their way, it's my job is to clarify to them how important it is to me, that how it's affecting me, that they are unwilling to consider my needs and desires. After I've made my feelings clear and really enlightened them as to how their selfishness is impacting on our relationship and on me, if they continue to refuse to take that into consideration, I've got to make some choices. I've got to either accept that, well, I'm living with somebody who really is so self-centered and so egotistical or so narcissistic that they don't care about my feelings, and, you know, I just need to be willing to accept that. You know, they've got good qualities in these ways, but, you know, as far as their concern about my needs, I just can't count on them for that. There are some people who are willing to accept those conditions in a relationship. Personally, I wouldn't be, but everybody's got the right to make that choice themselves.
So is this the kind of thing that you counsel people with?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge issue for a lot of people. And what we found is that very often when we talk to people about how to talk about their feelings in regard to their partner's selfishness, that they're sometimes able to bring it to their attention in a way that the other person can say, well, gee, you know, I really didn't realize that I was being that way. I didn't realize that you were feeling this way or that it was affecting you this way, and I don't want you to feel this way, and I want to make an effort, and I appreciate your bringing it to my attention in a way that doesn't make me wrong and shame me and blame me. So hopefully,
before our
last
20 seconds here, would you give people a way to get in touch with you?
Yes, if they go to our website, if they can remember that our name is Bloom, and sometimes people have recognition about that because we're talking about relationships blooming and people blooming in their life. If they can remember Bloom, our website is Bloomwork. And so our phone number is on there, and our email is on there, and our workshops are on there, and there's a bunch of free stuff. People can get these inspirational newsletters. They're archived from every month going back years.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Charlie and Linda Bloom, authors of Secrets of Great Marriages, Real Truth from Real Couples about Lasting Love. Go to their website, buy their book. You can also get it from Amazon. Thank you for joining us. Next week we're going to be talking about Paris Hilton. We appreciate you as an audience.